Hello and welcome to LCWS After Dark. I'm one of your hosts, Melissa.
And I'm Eli.
And today we also have a special guest, Kiefer.
Hello.
Tell us about yourself, Kiefer. Who are you? Why are you here?
Sure. I'm a master's student currently at Laurier in the Religion, Culture, and Global Justice program. I'm Melissa's partner. I'm also a writer, academic, queer person. I use he, they pronouns.
Okay, yeah. So Kiefer is here to discuss something very fun, which is writing multiple stories in a single universe. So Kiefer, what exactly is writing multiple stories in one universe? How does that work?
Sure. So I think maybe the best way to start the conversation is to separate like a book series all set in the same place from story set in the same universe. Because if you are thinking of, say, let's use Tolkien because I like Tolkien. Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. right, is all a book series. It's all the same characters, the same story, right? But then you extend it out to things like The Hobbit or The Silmarillion, which takes place like thousands of years before The Lord of the Rings.
Wait, I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah. So there's a main series and a trilogy, and oftentimes that's all you get. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's more stories happening within like the same universe. Maybe thinking of it like the Star Wars movies versus something like The Mandalorian that happens in the same universe and does sometimes interact with the stories that are being told there, but is also a story outside of that.
Okay, cool. So for you, as a master's student, or I guess just as a writer in general, how do you use that to your advantage in your stories?
I think for me, it's fun to be able to tell stories that are different styles, sometimes genres, within sort of the same self-contained universe. It lets me have like this grounding and foundation that allows me to not have to constantly be thinking while I'm writing. Not constantly be thinking about like things outside of the plot. So I guess in some respects it's nice because I've done a lot of the groundwork that you would have to do if you were just writing a new like short story or novel or whatever. Instead of having to start from ground zero, you're already like ahead a little bit by having this foundation that you've already developed.
Would you say it's almost like when you're given a prompt that has like a setting description in it? Except you created this yourself.
I think it's closer to that than it is starting at the beginning, but I think it's further along than that at the same time.
That makes sense.
In that case, what would you say? So you've listed a lot of advantages. What would be the disadvantages?
You're constrained more by the same Ooh. Sort of virtue of you starting ahead a little bit. You're also constrained by that. Like, for example, sometimes like language that I use is going to be consistent for things that are similar. And I'll get into an example from my own writing a little later. But it's, you need to fit things within the world that you've already established instead of just, you know, you have less freedom to just create new things, which you would if you had like an individual book.
So hypothetically, if you were given a writing prompt, let's say, if we go with Melissa's example, and you come up with this new character, this new story idea. Let's say originally this world was for, I don't know, let's go with The Hobbit. They need to go on a quest to save the world. And then later you have this idea for someone who maybe owns a bakery. You would have to make sure that that still all falls in line with the world that you created. Like maybe the bakery would have to be magical. Maybe this character wouldn't be able to do certain things because of their location, things like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe a less great example because I haven't watched them, but something like Harry Potter versus like the Magical Beasts movies where you have to...
I have no idea. I haven't seen those.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much of an idea either, but I know that the Magical Beasts takes place previously in history to Harry Potter. And when you're doing something like that and creating a new story, you need to make sure you're not like... Or maybe you do full on like... retroactively just rewrite the history of your world, which is something that lots of authors do. I'm sure J.K. Rowling has no problem with doing that.
But then it's very open to criticism.
Exactly, yeah.
Because people will notice.
That's actually really funny, because something, speaking of retroactively, before we started the podcast, Melissa and I were chatting a bit about a game I've been playing, which is called Trails in the Sky, and one of the characters used to be in the first game, his name was Zane, mm-hmm. and later on they changed it to Zin, and they changed a couple things about the stories, and I'm currently playing the remastered computer version, but my sister played the older version, and she was so confused by some of the things that I did, and she was like, what? That didn't exist in the original. So yeah, I guess you can, like, retroactively rewrite things, but if you have an audience, they might get a little bit confused.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the problem becomes, like, if you've set something in stone, so to say, or you've published something, and then are like, I don't know if I really like that, but you're still writing within the same universe, you'd have to abide by that. Or you'd have to think of, like, an in-universe reason for why that story isn't as correct, right? I mean, there is always, like, unreliable narrators and stuff that you can use, but there are still those restrictions, and you need to do a little bit more work to get around those restrictions if you need to.
Yeah, so I think what a lot of what you're saying sounds like is there needs to be a strict continuity sort of thing.
Yeah.
A good example of, like, continuity, if you're thinking of, like, a movie scene, this is where it's really noticeable, when most movie scenes are shot in parts and then, like, clipped together. So, like, say your the character is, like, has their hair in a ponytail in one scene, and then the camera angle changes, all of a sudden their hair is down, you know, that's like a continuity issue. Or say there's a cup on the table in front of them, and then you change angles and the cup is a different cup, or the cup is gone.
One of my favorite examples is usually it always happens whenever a character, like, gets their shirt wet or something. Like, that's always my favorite, because then the next scene their shirt is dry, even though it's like they just turn the camera. So one thing that I remember noticing, I watched Bob's Burgers, and in one scene a character has their shirt wet, and they have their shirt wet for, like, the entirety of the next point. Like, usually in animation, they forget about it really quickly, but they kept it. And I was like, woohoo, continuity.
Oh my God, I love Bob's Burgers. Anyway.
And that is probably a more difficult part about doing it yourself, because in something like a TV show or a movie, they have people whose job is specifically to look for continuity errors and to try to fix those.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take that job if you're just writing. And
It's really hard.
In that regard, you need to create tools that are good for that. Like, for example, I was mentioning language. So there are specific things within, I've written a couple of different stories within, like, shared universes, within multiple shared universes, because I enjoy doing this. And for one of them, I have, like, a kind of like a lexicon where I have specific words that are, or specific terms that I want to keep using. And that sort of is another way of linking these stories together. They're in similar settings. They're in, like, the same world, but they're not always connected narratively to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So having that shared world building elements, having, like, it's kind of like having for a TV show, they have things like world books or setting books. Having a tool like that becomes very, very useful in these kinds of situations, because it allows you to write something and then go back and be like, well, where can I add these buzzwords that I need to add into my thing to make sure people know what's going on?
Yeah, and that's honestly part of the reason why I have never, you know, I like writing long form stories. But I find I get, I'm really bad with continuity, let's just say that. I have a history of teleporting characters without realizing it, or just things changing on me, or I'll change the rules of something. Which I think is the reason why I'm starting to lean towards short stories, because I really love long-form stories. It's just the problem is I'm not very good at writing them.
Yeah, I find that a lot of the stories that I do in this format are shorter form stories. And maybe that's because I'm a master's student and I don't have the time to write larger stories.
Mood.
For one of them, it's like I have, like, a fantasy world that I've built, and I'm writing a larger form, like, novel of it that obviously is taking a lot of time because I'm a master's student. But I've written a couple of short stories that focus on characters from before the story that I'm writing happened. So it's nice because I get to be in this world that I've created and that I like and that I want to do more with. But it lets me actually complete a story with the time that I have to be able to do that.
Nice. Well, is there any parts of your story that you would like to share with us?
Sure. So after having that conversation, now I'm somewhat torn between reading sort of an excerpt that has some of those examples of words that I would use repeatedly, or reading... Actually, maybe I can do two different readings from two different stories.
Yeah, you can do two. Go for it.
That are sort of showing two different things. So this, I'll read the first paragraph of one of the stories. Maybe a little background. So this is kind of it's like a post-apocalyptic setting, and it's trying to emulate some kinds of ideas from like the 60s and the 70s, where they had this subgenre called the Dying Earth. And it's basically so far in the future after an apocalypse that the Earth has recreated a new society that is fundamentally different from ours because of the apocalyptic stuff. So it's kind of, it's like science fantasy-esque as well as being that post-apocalyptic, which I like because I think that, I like crossing over different genres. It's fun. All right. Even before the changes that came with Red Sun, the deserts of the former United States were difficult to traverse. Long use of fossil fuel technology had shaped the climate of these lands into something inimical to human life. But for Jewel, the desert was like an old friend. His composite scarf wrapped around his head like a shemek of ancient Terra, blocked both the sand blowing his way and the cancer-causing radiation of the red sun. The rest of his body was covered in a lightweight, beige, robe-like coat made of the same material as the scarf. Underneath this coat was his heavy pack and a breastplate made of salvaged rocket metal. On his hips, he wore a holster holding a revolver loaded with bullets made from depleted uranium. His pack contained boots, hard drives, data caches, and other more arcane forms of information storage, alongside his supplies for traveling and a mace strapped to his to the side, made of the same rocket metal as his breastplate. All things considered, Jewel was a classic example of a requisitions agent of the Keepers. So, it's the first paragraph of the story, and so it's supposed to kind of hit you with a lot of these ideas. It's so far in the future that the sun's turned red, so that's where the red sun kind of comes from. And I repeat that, and I try to constantly be drawing back to that idea of the sun being red, because it is an important part of the setting in some ways. The name of this short story is Under the Red Sun, and that's also the name I've given to the setting as well.
Oh.
Rocket metal is, obviously, doesn't come across in my, when I'm reading it, but it's like a dash. It's one word, rocket metal. and it's kind of, it would be something salvaged from
rockets.
Yeah, from rockets, basically, right? It's whatever they put on rockets. I have no idea what they put on rockets. The idea of like a composite scarf, which is some kind of like future fabric, depleted uranium bullets. That's kind of just a trope that is used in like science fiction kind of stuff. And I like it as a trope because I think it's cool. Talking about sort of, I guess it's most of like the things that I pulled in there. I guess I also have like this person, Jewel, is a requisitions agent, right? What does that mean? I don't know. But people will it comes across throughout the rest of the story that he's kind of like looking for old knowledge in the world. And the organization he belongs to, the Keepers, is also something that comes back to. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when I read the second little bit. The Keepers are kind of like this organization that's trying to preserve knowledge and also create like a history of what's happened since the Red Sun and since like the world basically changed and everything like that. And all of the people who belong to the Red Sun have taken new names, and all of those names are the names of famous explorers, scientists, like visionaries and stuff like that. So the main character in this is Keeper Jewel, like the person who the unit's joules, like, of energy is. Like, it's named after mm-hmm. this person, this scientist, Joule. I have an excerpt at the beginning of the story, and in all of these stories, I like to put a little, like, one or two paragraph thing from a future history book from this setting to kind of ground you in it. It does, sometimes it sort of spoils what's going to happen at the end, or it gives some background information for what happened within the world after the events of the story. And it kind of positions you in this shared universe so that you're kind of, you feel like you're reading through it in a way that is giving you snapshots into a larger world. And the intention with these stories is to make like an anthology that sort of shows you different snapshots of the world, while these little blurbs are kind of giving you more background information so you can piece together what's happening yourself. And they're always written by a keeper.
Cool.
Yeah.
I personally really like the line when you said the desert was kind of like an old friend. I don't know. That feels very cozy to me.
That's fair. Yeah, this is definitely like the story about Joule is like kind of about him giving up being a keeper and passing it on to someone else. And it's kind of about how his journey is nearing its end, but he's very used to doing this, and so he's well practiced.
Hmm.
I can't remember if I ended up making him die at the end or if I left his fate ambiguous. I think I left it ambiguous.
I feel like you're very much a person who kills off their characters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. I just, you know, people die.
That's true. Is this story, would this be the first story that appears in the anthology that you're writing?
No, I've thought about that a lot, actually. I'm not sure yet. I think I would need to write some more stories for it in order to do it. And I, you know, master student, haven't had time. That's a repeating.
No, I completely understand. I think it is interesting, though, starting kind of this world and starting a beginning with an ending. I think that's kind of poetic in a way.
Yeah. The only reason why I would maybe strain away from doing this is because this takes place a lot later in the sort of chronology of my world than, say, the next story that I have, which is called, and it's in Latin, so bear with me, it's called Rudum Sol Invictus, which is Red Sun Undefeated, or Red Sun
mm-hmm.
Unconquerable. And it's kind of a play off the idea of Sol Invictus, who was like a minor cult in ancient Rome. And it sounds cool. And it's got more of a theme of it's taking place within like a war that's happening in this future world, a war between two different organizations, one called the Puritan League, which is kind of like this like neo-fascist like ethno-state. And the other one being sort of a xenophobic, kind of almost like medieval Catholic organization called the Solar Order of New Jerusalem.
Hmm.
So there's not a lot of good people in my stories, which I think is a theme because I think everybody's terrible. But in this specifically, it's kind of like the grand theme in my setting. I feel like I'm just talking about my setting and not about shared world.
That's fine.
The grand theme here is that they're like that sometimes even when everything around you is kind of terrible, there is good that can be done by individuals within that world.
Hmm.
And so the first one was kind of about how it also involves this like solar order, because they're basically like religious people who are unaware that they are using advanced technology, and they think it's like divinely inspired.
Mm.
And they've kind of taken that to a crusading element where they're attacking people who they view as like mutated, or they view as like uncleaned because they're living within like the desert, or they're not living according to the laws of sort of what's happening. And they worshiped the sun before the sun became red. So because the sun turned red, they think the sun is angry with everybody. So that's sort of the impetus for their crusades.
Oh.
Actually, here, I'll read this and then I can talk a little bit more about it.
Perfect. I was about to say, you should tell us your next snippet.
Yeah. So this is one of those paragraphs at the beginning of the story. In the year 200 after the Red Sun, the Solar Order of New Jerusalem called the first of their Solar Crusades to mark the bicentennial anniversary of the sun darkening. The papal council of the time called for a cleansing of those unbelievers who had caused Holy Soul to become scarlet with rage, and to return to the time of the merciful yellow of the Holy Soul. This address lasted days, and would come to be called the Rudum Sol Invictus in Old Latin, and was used for the next 50 years as doctrine of the Solar Order. The primary target of this crusade was the League of City-States north of New Jerusalem, known for their xenophobic and anti-solar laws. Keepers of the time viewed the resulting war as positive for the other organizations of the American continent, as it weakened both powers. Time, however, would come to make those words like dust in their mouths, as both the Solar Order and the Puritan League would come into conflict with the Keepers. Keeper Volta, preludes to the Keeper Wars. So I end it there with like the author and then the name of this fictional history book that it is coming from.
Mm.
And yeah, it's narratively, it's supposed to be setting people up so that they know that they're in the same war or same world. Sorry, not
they're in the same war.
But those blurbs have very little to do with the actual content of what do you call it, the full story itself. I think I wrote both of them after I wrote the short stories, actually. Because I was... Oh, no, you know what? For the first one, I wrote it beforehand because I knew where the story was going and where it was going to end. And this one, I wrote it after because I wasn't really sure where exactly I was going with this story. And this story stars, like, someone who has kind of been... it's kind of a little bit of commentary on like rejecting or on religious trauma and on rejecting like things that you've been taught through your whole life because you find out that they're wrong. And so it's about like a woman who was a squire to one of these like religious knights and how she is forced into like a horrific situation in war and ends up just like walking away from the whole thing and becoming like a sort of semi legendary figure in for defending people from like the same organization she used to belong to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all about, it's kind of like her origin story in many ways without any other story connected to her story at all. Just like mentions of her in other stories.
Cool.
It's kind of, I drew inspiration from, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Mad Max.
I know of it.
But yeah. So the big thing behind those movies is that each story is not necessarily a true story of something that happened with Max, but that Max is this figure who has become like legendary within this post-apocalyptic world where people tell stories about someone who is doing good things within the world in order to kind of keep alive that sense of morality.
Okay.
And I'm trying to emulate something similar to that without using the exact same character, but instead using like different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think it sounds like a really interesting story, and I see what you mean now about like trying to make sure that things are unique without, like, you want it to be this person's own story, but at the same time it needs to fit in, right? So you're kind of limited in the ways that you can modify what you're doing or modify something a character is doing.
Yeah. I really enjoy like being creative inside of a box and establishing a box because I view it as you can't really break outside of a box or go outside of a box unless you have firmly established where that box is.
Yeah, it's kind of like learning the rules before you try to break them, right? Like with art or... Exactly. It's the same thing with writing, generally speaking, too. We've talked about this before. You should try and learn how things work before you try to break them. And I would say that's a pretty established mm-hmm. rule for pretty much anything, mm-hmm. any kind of discipline that you're in.
Yeah. And yeah, in the case of writing in sort of a shared universe, you're also the one who's making the rules, too, mm-hmm. right? So you should be the one who knows them the best to be able to then break them or bend them or do whatever you want with them. Stay completely within them. Like, it's all up to each individual as to what they want to do.
Absolutely. Kiefer, we are getting mm-hmm. close to the half an hour mark. Do you have anything that you would like to share with people before we head out? Any final words or thoughts?
That's a good question. I think for me, the funnest part about the whole process is like the world building aspect of it, being able to sort of create something. And it doesn't have to be huge. Mine is like a page long of what I want to do. And I add to it sometimes when I add new things. But having like a base foundation for what you want to do within a story world or a universe, and then adding on top of that with your own stories that can be connected in whatever way you want them to be connected, it's really fun to play around with that and to play around with like how you want to structure your own rules. And that sounds somewhat like constraining, but again, like they're your rules, so be as constraining as you want or as loose with the rules as you want to. But it's always fun to challenge yourself in ways. And I think that's why I enjoy this, is because it's challenging in a lot of different ways.
And I guess in that way, writing within the constraint is like kind of freeing, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
All right. Well, thank you, Heifer, for coming and doing this with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, of course. I had fun.
It was educational, and it's fun to see what you've been up to, because you're super busy master student.
Yeah, yeah. A break would be nice.
If any of you know Kiefer, you know Kiefer is pretty much constantly busy.
Yeah, yeah. I have a problem with taking on too many things and not realizing when.
You do.
When I, you know, you can tell in that voice that there's been conversations about that outside of this. But yeah, I am busy, but it's fun to have small projects like this to work on in between.
Yeah, and it was very interesting conversation, very insightful.
Awesome. I appreciate that you enjoyed it.
It's always fun hearing about people's writing projects as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you hold Kiefer captive, so you can hear about them anytime you want. Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, that's what a relationship is, right? Holding someone captive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's just what you do when you're dating. You're like, hey, I want to hear about this thing, and you're going to sit here and tell me about it.
Yeah.
No, that's fair.
All right. Well, this has been LCWS After Dark. I almost said In the Margins, which was my old podcast.
Check it out if you haven't.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, it's been a while.
It still exists.
I don't think I've... Yeah, it's still up on Radio Laurier, I believe.
Yeah, it is.
It hasn't been added to.
Should I plug my old podcast too, then?
Yeah, what, are you still doing yours? Should we promote yours?
I don't have the time to do mine right now, but it's something I'd like to revisit. I did have a podcast, though, at the same time.
Yes, you did. We did a collab.
Radio Laurier. Mm-hmm. It's called Radio Nerd, and I talked about... progressive and sort of like social justice and stuff like that, things within
nerd culture. And if you want to find that on Radio Laurier's website, it's under archives. Apparently.
Oh, because it's that old.
I don't think mine's even under archives. I think mine's still in the regulars.
No, it's still in the regular one right now.
Probably because I haven't graduated yet.
Maybe.
Oh, you know what? It might be that. Yeah.
Anyway, this has been another episode of LCWS After Dark. Thank you again for joining us, Kiefer, and we will see you in 2 weeks for our final episode of the year. Woohoo! All right, see you next week, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.